Good morning. Good morning, everyone. I think we're ready to start. It's just after 11 o'clock. And so I would ask for some quiet here while we begin. My name is Janet Seaworth. I'm the administrative law judge. And I've been designated by the Office of Administrative Hearings to preside this morning upon the request of the Public Service Commission. And I serve as the procedural hearing officer for this hearing. And this is OAH case number 2014-0505. And this is the North Dakota Public Service Commission case number RC-13850. This is the hearing on the application of the Coyote Creek Mining Company, LLC, for a surface coal mining permit on 8,091.51 acres of land in Mercer County. PSC conditionally approved the permit, and that's permit number NACC-1302 on October 22nd, 2014. And they did provide notice that any person with an interest, which is or may be adversely affected by the permit approval, may request a formal hearing with the commission. Casey Voigt objected, and on November 24th, 2014, he requested a formal hearing. On November 25th, 2014, the PSC issued a notice of formal hearing setting the hearing for 11 a.m. Central Standard Time on December 19th, 2014 in the PSC hearing room. And that's where we are today for the hearing. The notice of hearing issued noted that Mr. Voigt had concerns with regard to the size of the permit area, the reclamation practices to be used, and his loss of agricultural production. It's now just a little past 11 a.m. Central Standard Time. On December 19th, 2014, we are in the PSC hearing room on the 12th floor of the state capitol in Bismarck, North Dakota, and this is the time and date and place that was set in the notice of formal hearing issued by the PSC on November 25th, 2014. On November 1st, 2013, Coyote Creek Mining Company, LLC, filed an application for a surface coal mining permit for a new mine 10 miles southwest of Beulah, North Dakota. The application and the request are set forth in the notice of filing and the notice of hearing, and the proposed location is shown by a map which is part of the notice. The notice of hearing that was sent on November 25th, 2014 specified several issues for hearing and consideration. Those three are the appropriate size of the permit area, the reclamation practices that would be used on land to be mined, and Mr. Voigt's loss of agricultural production. On December 16th, 2014, just a couple days ago, the parties did appear for a pre-hearing conference, and they agreed on the order of procedure that we'll have today, and they also agreed that witnesses may appear by telephone. Yesterday, I did confirm that telephone witnesses would be allowed, and I also asked that the parties identify as soon as they knew which witnesses would appear by telephone. I would ask at this time that the parties please state their appearance for the record. And let me know who you have with you. Mr. Broughton?
Derek Broughton from Baumstark Broughton Law Partners in Bismarck, North Dakota, and I have with me Casey Voigt, the gentleman who requested the hearing. I will also have with me another attorney in our office named J.J. England, who is continuing to get our exhibits together for the hearing, but should be here shortly.
Thank you. Mr. Biella?
Yes, Your Honor. My name is Brian Biella. I'm with the law firm of Crowley Fleck in Bismarck, North Dakota, representing Coyote Creek Mining Company, LLC. Along with me is Blaine Johnson, an attorney with our firm. And, of course, we have numerous people with Coyote Creek as well.
All right. Thank you. And PSC counsel?
My name is Alana Jeffcoat-Sacco. I'm general counsel at the commission. I do have with me today Jim Deitch. He's the director of the Reclamation Division. Dean Mose, who is the assistant director, and Guy Welch, who is an environmental scientist. I would like to, at this time, ask permission for those three people to possibly have the opportunity to ask questions of the witnesses instead of me asking questions. I may have some, but there will probably be substantial technical areas that it would be better if they could ask the question directly themselves.
Mr. Broughton, do you have any objection to PSC staff asking questions?
Would it be possible to reserve any objections until the actual point where they are doing the questioning?
You may. Yeah. Mr. Biella, any objection?
No, Your Honor.
Your Honor.
Mr. Brown, yes.
I should also mention, I didn't mention it, but I also have with me here Mark Anderson is one of the witnesses who will be testifying on our behalf, and Lance Loken is one of our consultants, and I spoke with Mr. Biella. He was okay with Mr. Loken joining us up here, and obviously Mr. Voigt has a lot of friends in the room as well.
All right, thank you. There was mention of a sign-up sheet going around, and what I'd like to know is if there's anyone present who is either a proponent of the application or opposed to the application that would like to participate in the hearing by offering testimony. If you'd like to do that during the public portion of the testimony, would you raise your hand so I have an indication? The question is, if there is anybody who would like to offer testimony and participate in the hearing during the public portion of the hearing. If there is, would you raise your hand?
If you have a question, not necessarily a testimony, but a question about regulations or whatever.
If you'd like to do that during the public portion of the hearing for input, yes, I would ask that you raise your hand and also indicate whether you'd like to participate on the sign-up sheet that's going around. Okay. All right. The public portion of the testimony occurs later in the hearing, but I just wanted to get an idea of how many people that I might be anticipating would be participating. At this time, what I'd like to do is introduce the commission. We have the Public Service Commission members here today, and to my left, we have Chairman Commissioner Brian Calk. To my immediate left, we have Commissioner Randy Christman. And to my far left, we have Commissioner Julie Fedorchik.
Morning.
And at this time, I would like to ask if they have any opening comments that they would like to make. Commissioner Calk?
Oh, thank you, Your Honor. Just welcome everyone for coming out here today. I'll give you kind of the my view of how these things kind of run. For those of you who have never been to a PSC hearing, there's a lot of formality around it, and that's good because everything we do is based on a record developed at the hearing, testimony that's we've already received, we may hear today. So the judge will swear whoever comes in and does their testimony. It's a very formal process. A little background, too, on that. When we received the letter from Casey basically on, what was it, November 24th, the way it lays out is we have 30 days to have a hearing. And so that's why it happened this way. And it's very challenging when hearings come in for the commission and staff and everyone else to find time to make everything work when you're given that kind of 30-day window. So that's why we kind of developed a schedule the way it's set up. I know the attorneys went through this, but for the rest of the crowd that, you know, basically we're starting today at 11 and we're going to go till 3 o'clock today. And we'll maybe take a break to use the restroom. If people need to come and go, please do that. But then we've already got it scheduled for 8:30 on December 23rd to continue because we figure by starting at 11 o'clock, we're just not going to get through everything today. That's just the way it is. And also, we don't want to be rushing anyone. We want to make sure everybody has the full time. We want to make sure we can ask all of our questions. And so that's why it's set up that way. So that's the format that we'll follow. And then we have roughly well, 30 days after the hearing closes on the 23rd for us to make a decision. And so this thing will, I think, move along very quickly. But the big thing for me today is just be patient with us. Derek and his crowd will make their case first. That may finish today. It may not. When they're done, then I think Mr. Biela and their crowd will make their case. And then our folks will ask a lot of questions, too. But we're going to have a lot of questions. The technical part of it, I think, is where this comes down to. There's a lot of technical issues here. The commission has already voted on this and approved it. And we've thoroughly reviewed it at that time. Speak about all the technical issues we thought were answered. So if there's something that, that perhaps you don't think we answered, that's what this is all about today. And so that's where I will say that the jurisdiction of the Public Service Commission is limited to a few issues. How much someone gets paid for an easement, that's not jurisdictional to us. And so that doesn't mean that it's not an issue for you, but it just means that we don't set those. We see that a lot in wind farms where we may agree with the final location, but if the landowner has questions about what they're getting paid, that's a separate venue to work that out. And so the judge will help me out on that as well as our general counsel. If there's questions on that, you know, we'll do our best to walk through it. But that's one thing that, you know, our jurisdiction is limited to a certain area, and that's what we're really going to try to focus our questions on. And if all of you could help on that area as well, that the attorneys, you know what our jurisdiction is and isn't. So if you're asking witnesses questions that you know isn't our jurisdiction, I would say why. So that's the only questions that I have. Just thank everyone for coming. Like I said, if there are a lot of people here today, the restrooms, if you need to come and go, please do that. But there's a lot of people here, too, and we're recording it. So if you can, just try to keep it quiet out there. And for our court reporter, sorry, I will try to slow down. So, thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Christman.
Brian covered it. One little detail that he didn't cover, but it can be pretty important. When it comes to restrooms, if you go out in the hallway by the elevator, there's a ladies' restroom here. And for the men, you can go up one floor to the 13th, or I believe one down to the 11th, and there's a men's restroom in the same place. So it's every other floor. Brian talked about the jurisdictional aspect of our decision-making, and it's an important thing, and so I just want to reemphasize it, that oftentimes, you know, the public can make their opinions based on just what they want to happen. We will make our opinion based on the jurisdictional aspects of the case, and so that's very important. Lastly, I want to point out, you know, it's no secret that I believe that we currently have and have for a long time had a very good reclamation and siting program at this commission, and I'm very proud to be of that fact. But I think one of the things that has for a long time made it a very good program is the openness to the public, and that's not unique to our reclamation and siting program. I think that's one of the good things about North Dakota government in general is that we're very open to the public, and citizens have these opportunities for hearings and this sort of thing. And so we're here today, and I expect we'll be here Tuesday and getting all of the information so that we can make the best decision possible based on our jurisdiction. And I think it's a good thing and a good example of North Dakota government in action.
Thank you. Commissioner Fedorchak.
Well, Randy, you stated that very well, and I just want to echo some of your comments. But first, I want to say sorry for such tight quarters. It's not usual for there to be standing room only for a PSC hearing. Normally, we're not that popular. But sorry about that. We don't necessarily know when we set these hearings and the locations how big the crowd is going to be. So hopefully those of you who are out in the hall are able to hear and get what you need from this process, because we want you here and we want you to be part of it. Along the lines of what Randy said, this is what makes government great in our country, is having the opportunity for public hearings like this, where people who have issues have an opportunity to express them. And my goal is that in the end we can have a good open discussion about some of your concerns, Mr. Voigt, and hopefully find a way to resolve them in the end and end up with a better product when we're done with this hearing process. So thank you for being here. We look forward to a good discussion today and a good fair hearing in the next couple of days, however long it takes.
All right, thank you. Commissioner, I just want to talk a little bit about the hearing procedure that we'll use this morning. The parties did talk about the hearing procedure at a pre-hearing conference earlier this week and agreed Mr. Voigt would first be given an opportunity to present his case, and any witness that is called by Mr. Voigt will be subject to questioning by the other parties, by Coyote Creek and also PSC. Council and staff, and then upon completion of Mr. Voigt's case, then Coyote Creek will have an opportunity to present its case, and its witnesses will also be subject to questioning. Upon the completion of Coyote Creek's case, then there is an opportunity for public testimony. Now, if we run into a situation where someone is here from the public, you know, maybe we can take that out of order. That's something that we can assess as we go along today. But I'll call on those people who wish to provide information to the commission for public testimony at that time. All public testimony is made under oath. This is an administrative proceeding, just so everybody is clear about that. Also, according to North Dakota Century Code Section 283206, an administrative agency must specifically state at the hearing whether it's applying the North Dakota Rules of Evidence to the hearing or whether they are waived. And so I would ask PSC Council if the Rules of Evidence apply today.
I think that the general answer would be yes, they do apply, but if there is a specific request on a case-by-case basis to waive a rule with the basis for it, then you or the commission can make that decision at the time.
Okay. So in the absence of any particular request that they be waived, they apply. All right. Are there any questions about the procedures that we'll use this morning? Mr. Broughton?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Biella?
Yes, Your Honor. At the pre-hearing conference, we discussed that the Public Service Commission Reclamation Division would present its case third. I want to clarify if that is going to happen.
Yes, that is. I'm sorry if I neglected to discuss that. Yes, it is.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Your Honor.
Yes.
I had one addition to what you described as the procedure, and that would be the questioning. In addition to the questioning by the parties, the questioning by the commissioners.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
We always give an opportunity for opening statements. And so, Mr. Broughton, if you'd like to make an opening statement.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would. I want to just start by thanking the commission and the commission staff for being so flexible. This was certainly difficult in the short time frame we had to pull this together, and I appreciate the flexibility, both scheduling it today and finding another day so that we could finish it and have enough time for the hearing. I know that Mr. Voigt appreciates that, and I think all the parties do. I appreciate all the folks. Casey is apparently a popular guy and has a lot of friends. I appreciate all the folks coming out today. As the judge pointed out, there are a couple concerns, and what we intend to do is put Mr. Voigt on the stand first so that he can just start out by explaining what his concerns are, why he's asked for this hearing, and give you some of the context and background for that. We had the pre-hearing conference, and because of the abbreviated nature of this, it was difficult even at that time for us to know how long we were going to go. I am hoping that we'll be able to finish today, even potentially a little bit early, but after Mr. Voigt, we're calling a gentleman, Charles Norris. He is a hydrogeologist and does go by Chuck. And he is
Chuck
going,
Norris?
Yes.
That's fine to me.
Yes, he is. and he's going to be primarily discussing the alluvial valley floor determination. And we will then call Stephen Merrill. And some of the folks at the PSC might know Mr. Merrill, but he worked at the Mandan Agricultural Research Station, and he was one of the scientists who conducted some of the Zap Wedge experiments and the other studies that actually form the basis for some of the Public Service Commission's regulations with respect to reclamation. And he was active for several decades doing that kind of research on reclamation and soil health. And so we're going to have him testify and explain some of his experience with all of that research, what he's learned over the years and in recent years. And I have with me behind me a gentleman named Mark Anderson. Mark is expert in soils as well as rangeland conservation, and he worked with the Natural Resource Conservation Service on various issues for a number of decades, and he'll be testifying about some issues related to vegetation and soils, and we'll be discussing soil health as well. During the pre-hearing, we talked a little bit about the potential for calling rebuttal witnesses on Tuesday, and so that's a possibility, but other than that, it will primarily be Mr. Voigt explaining his concerns, and then we'll have our three experts discussing some of those issues more specifically. And so once again, I just appreciate the opportunity and thank everyone for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Biella.
Yes, Your Honor. Just want to thank everyone also for their working with us to get this done in a timely manner and yet comply with the law. So thank you very much.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
I have no opening statement. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Voigt, you may call your first witness. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Broughton.
And we call Casey Voigt.
Mr. Voigt, before we begin your testimony, I need to advise you on the penalties for perjury in North Dakota. The penalties for perjury is a Class C felony punishable by a maximum $10,000 fine, a maximum 5 years imprisonment, or both. Would you raise your right hand, please? Do you solemnly swear that the testimony that you're about to give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth under the penalties of perjury?
I do.
Thank you. Mr. Broughton.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Voigt, can you start by just stating your full name and your address for us?
Casey Lee Voigt, 6571 17th Street Southwest, Zapp, North Dakota.
Okay. And can you just give us a little bit of personal history? Just kind of tell us who you are, where you've worked, what you've been doing over the years.
I guess my family moved to our current ranch in 1971. I was a young child at that time, attended Beulah Public School, graduated from Beulah Public School in 1982, went on to Dickinson State College, attended some chemistry technology classes, later came back home because that's where my passion truly was. Spent several years working at the elevator business in Beulah, and eventually got on with a contractor doing some blasting work with the coal mines, and that led to contract work at basically all four of the active mines in the state at this time. Eventually got on as an employee with Knife River Coal, south of Beulah. Worked for them for 12 years. Until I was able to retire from mining and ranch full-time. As far as my family, married my wife Julie in 1994, and we have two children. My daughter Leah was born in 1996. My son Lane was born in 2004. And my daughter's graduated from Beulah now and is going to college in the University of Minnesota. And my son Lane is attending school at Beulah.
Okay. How many years?
I had a tough time hearing you, and I think the crowd is too. So I don't know if
that mic bends. You can straighten it out at the end or turn it. Or
a lot of time people don't listen to me anyway.
Can you tell me how many years was it that you were working with the coal mines?
I did about 6 years of contract work with the blasting company, ICI. Imperial Chemicals Incorporated, and then I did a little over 12 years with the Knife River Mine that eventually sold out to Dakota Westmoreland.
Okay. And you mentioned that you came home to start ranching. Is the land you're ranching now a ranch that's been in your family?
Yes. Actually, Our family purchased it in 1971, but prior to us purchasing it, the Keogh brothers actually homesteaded there in 1896. Tom Keogh actually built the house for the headquarters in 1908, which is where we still currently live, is in the original house, Sears and Roebuck's mail order house that is very well built. As time proceeded, one of the Keogh brothers' hired men, Ralph Murray, purchased the ranch from them in 1948. And later on in 71, due to some health issues, decided to sell it. And my dad actually was doing some business in Minot. He had leased some property in the White Shield area. And he talked to Doc Ballas from Hazen. And Doc Ballas informed him that he knew of a really good guy with a really nice place that he thought was for sale. Sorry. Anyway, my dad fortunately got a hold of Ralph Murray and talked to him and thought that he was a genuine good guy, which anybody that knows Ralph, knew that he was one of the best people ever. My dad always referred to that day in March of 1971, signing the papers with John Richardson, that was one of his best days ever. My mom always argued that June 28th in 1954 was better.
So the ranch has been in your family for some time. Can you give us just a little bit of history of the operation and how the land has been ranched since the time your dad bought it?
Prior to us owning it, it was under very similar management practices because the land itself has strategically placed state lands within its boundaries to where it has been worked as a single unit since the early 1900s. And it basically is some nice rolling hills with abundant water. I believe there's like 10 different stock dams that are all spring-fed that supply abundant water. I have several alfalfa fields that are sub-irrigated. After I kind of took over for my dad, Scott Ressler with the Stockman's Association helped work with me on some improvements. We put in a couple of water pipelines and probably about 5 miles of pipeline and I think like 15 water tanks. And we did lots of cross fencing and some tree plantings and went to a rotational grazing system where, originally when the ranch was started in the 1900s, it was you just stocked it up and let them take care of themselves, where modern technology and advancements have definitely increased not only stocking rates, but also production.
And can you tell us, you obviously think highly of the land, and obviously one of the indicators of that would be your cattle. Can you tell us a little bit about your cattle and the weights and how your cattle generally compare or how your ranch compares to other ranches?
Originally I started out with some of my dad's original cows and then eventually bought replacement heifers from Dr. Wayne Bolin, who was our state vet, and started with a tremendous maternal base to my cows. And then since then I've spent a lot of time and effort focusing on the genetics to continue improving those maternal bases. And now I've actually implemented some Hereford crossbreeding to those Angus genetics to try and further the quality of the cattle.
And you're still ranching the land today, right?
Yes, and my son would sure like to continue in the future.
Okay. At some point, you did sign a co-lease on the land, is that right?
Unfortunately, yes.
Okay, and you understood at that time that would result in the ranch and the land on the ranch being mined for coal?
Yeah, that gets to be a lot more complicated than it just sounds on the surface. Prior to any leases being signed, my parents had actually had a lease that was not very well put together, or however you want to say that. Before that lease had expired, our family was approached by North American to do an extension. So at that point in time, I guess, with different family meetings and whatnot, I was appointed to represent not only my own personal interests, but also all my siblings' interests in the mineral reserves. And actually, they have a contract for deeds on the surface, so they actually did have some rights to the surface also. Along with my family, also Calvin and Patience Seiler from Ralph Murray's daughter were also mineral owners, and they asked me all to represent them in their interests along with my personal interests. So leading into the coal signing, we went through several different meetings. Most of them were involving meeting with Jim Melchior from North American. And Jim made a lot of promises and misrepresented what I thought the lease, what it eventually turned out to be the lease says. I have a letter actually from him that specifically points out some misleading information that I was given prior to that. And at that point, I guess, I was led to believe that what he was telling me was true. So on those pretenses, I did what I thought was the best for all parties involved and went ahead with signing the lease.
Well, and so what was your understanding of how the mining process would affect your land at that time?
I had worked in the mines, so I definitely had an understanding of how the land is moved and how the coal is removed and the land is supposed to be replaced. I had, I guess, an impression in my mind, and I think I had brought these questions and concerns up with Jim Melchior about what the land would be like when it was done being mined. And I was always told that it would be as good or better than it was before. That is ultimately the goal of the reclamation laws, not only of the state of North Dakota, but also the federal regulations.
And so at the time you were signing the coal lease, that was, you know, what had been represented to you and what you believed?
Yes. I have a letter where I was told I would be reimbursed of all losses. And I believe the actual letter states, North American's commitment to restoring Casey's Ranch to its pre-mining condition should mining operations.
And since that time, do you have a different impression or understanding of what your land is going to be like after it's been mined?
Yes. Unfortunately, I had heard some grumblings prior to the leasing, and I thought maybe they were just possibly some landowners over-exaggerating the true problems. You drive by mine land, it looks green, it looks good from a distance. It's not really until you get into it and see what the actual production and the lay of the land is before you truly understand what the reclamation is truly like.
So what specific problems did you hear about that gave you concern about what was going to happen to your land?
I guess some of the original comments that I started taking a little more serious was from a guy that rents my land, John Winan, and I look at him as being one of the best farmers in Mercer County, and he uses very good new technology for all of his farming practices, and he was struggling to get the production that he felt he should be able to accomplish with his practices. So then from that point, I started asking more questions to Don Steffens and Sarah Floth.
And who are they?
I believe they're supposed to be representing Coyote Creek with the environmental side of the development.
Okay, and what questions were you asking them?
Originally, I just was trying to ask them, you know, what the basic knowledge was they had of the reclamation and what practices they use. And a lot of it they tried to talk over my head or around me to where I didn't get a clear answer. So then I rephrased my question at different times, and I was more direct at why do you have so much problems with the reclaiming at Coteau? And I think at times I even referenced John Winans' problems and production records. They continued to try and explain to me that they understood there was problems with their cropland reclamation, but they felt that their grassland reclamation was better, and that I believe at one time Sarah Floth commented to me that, well, you have a different soil type, so you're not going to have the problems that they have at Coteau. So when I kept trying, when I kept feeling like I was getting misled from the truth, then I started trying to make other phone calls to more landowners and even renters of the reclaimed land. And the more I talked, the more people I talked to, the more problems I found. To date, I would have to say I've probably talked to 50 different landowners on different reclamation issues, and I have not found one positive supporting evidence of someone that was truly happy with the reclamation results. And I believe those are truly resemblant of the reclamation practices.
And I want to ask you to name names, but are any of those folks here today?
Yes, there are several of them present.
And do you have any understanding of why they're not testifying with you today?
Various reasons for...
I'm going to have to object, Your Honor. That's very much hearsay.
Sustained.
Did you speak to anyone else other than landowners about issues with reclamation? And I know you spoke about the folks at Coyote Creek, but beyond that, did you speak with anyone about issues?
Yes, I had actually tried contacting the Public Service Commission on several different occasions. Most cases, I was referred to Jim Deutsch, who I believe is supposed to be the head of the Reclamation Department. I don't know, Jim maybe would have better records, but I suppose we've spoken 10 or 12 times on the phone. Do you think that would be accurate, Jim?
I'm thinking 4 or 5.
How about, you had mentioned that you worked within the coal industry and at the coal mines for a number of years. Did you have any friends at the coal mines that you talked to about the issues?
Yeah, I guess over the years. I know one individual in particular that works for Dakota Westmoreland, you know, and their reclamation practices. Granted, they were not perfect, but all in all, I think hindsight, they are definitely better than North American's practices. Okay. In and amongst North American, I've talked with several of their reclamation people, either at Coteau Mine or at Falkirk Mine. And the general consensus I get from them is within their reclamation departments, they would like to do things differently. But they're... corporate people are not allowing them the freedom to do all they would like to do.
Okay, and we've covered some of this, obviously, but what I'd like to do at this point is, you know, just give you an opportunity to explain what your concerns are. And so you've obviously talked about the sufficiency of reclamation, but maybe with respect to that, you can talk about your land and what your specific concerns are on your land with respect to, you know, the reclamation process.
Well, aside from 40 and 50-year-old trees that obviously will never be replaced, I think we can get into just the general contouring being more like I had mentioned earlier, rolling hills with numerous springs. I think to just put back lifts with the drag line at 50 to 100 feet at a time, it doesn't do the surface any justice by the time you get back to the subsoil or the topsoil. I think the true problems lie deeper than just the surface. Along with that, a lot of what I own is native grasses, and it's very, very difficult to get native grasses established at the rates that I have. I believe according to the PSC records, they're showing approximately 92% native grass and 8 different desirable native species. That not only in itself is a good environment for the cattle, but it's also a good colony for the plants to actually help the soil health and help each another plant species grow in harmony.
And do you have concerns then about the productivity of either the grassland or the cattle grazing on it?
Oh, yes, definitely. Like I said, to have that high of a native grass, it is almost, it's hard enough just to get native seed of that percentage and then to get it established and get it to grow as a unison colony is very difficult. As far as the cattle, I know when we first, I do two-pass grazing, so when we first move cattle to a new pasture, they spend a lot of their time nosing around all the taller grasses and looking for the shorter native grasses because that's what they prefer. And I think there's been some NDSU studies that show that cattle actually gain better on the native grasses because of the nutritional value of the native grasses and of the extended season that they're allowed to graze on that.
I'm sorry, I need to interrupt. Whoever has their cell phone, would you please turn off your cell phone or mute it? Thank you. Please continue.
We also talked a little bit about other concerns, but I'd just like to give you the opportunity to talk about any other concerns that led you to ask for the hearing today.
Like I said, you know, it kind of started out as just a lot of questions, and then when those questions weren't getting answered, then I thought I was probably asking the wrong people the right questions. So if you can't change the question, you got to change the people you're talking to, I guess. So after I wasn't getting the answers I felt I should from Don and Sarah, I started making some phone calls, and I found a John Kepenick in Dickinson that was a soil scientist that had done a Coteau profile number 5, and I visited with him for quite a while, and he sent me his study that he had done on the reclamation lands at Coteau, and he told me on the phone that his general opinion was that even just by...
Your Honor, this is hearsay?
Sustained.
It's in his profile.
Your Honor, may I respond?
Yes.
I think that hearsay is used to prove the truth of the matter. We're not trying to prove the truth of what he said. We're just giving an idea of what Mr. Voigt's frame of mind is and why he's asking for the hearing, where his concerns come from.
If you can explain your own understanding, that's acceptable. But I can't have you tell me what someone else said to you outside of this proceeding.
John actually sent me pictures, and then in those pictures, it appeared to me that the roots did not penetrate very far into the subsoil, and I believe that is an underlying cause, like I said earlier, about how the surface is just what we see. It is the entire overlay of the land is what needs to be addressed in to have a better reclamation practice. So as far as John's survey that he did at Coteau, then I'll probably just not get into that in detail then. Sure. Another one that I ended up talking to then, John gave me the name of a Perry Sullivan that works here in the Bismarck office, another soil scientist, and he did a production study on the Falkirk mine. And his feelings and his study are also public record. And he also believed that there was too much compaction and that was causing a lack of production, not only for cropland, but also for grasslands. I believe that was in August then that I would have talked to Jim Deutsch, and I tried to pass that information on to him, but he acted like he hadn't heard of either one of those. Or no, I take that back. He had heard of Perry's study, but he hadn't heard of John's study.
And moving on from some of the reclamation issues that we've been discussing, is there anything else you would like to mention with respect to concerns you had, problems you had, things that you want to say on the record that led to you asking for this hearing?
I guess just in general communications with North American employees, you know, they come along and big smiling face and want to tell you how they want to be a good neighbor and how they're trying to do what's right for you and your land and different things like that. But from what I've learned dealing with them, I really don't think they know what a good neighbor is. I live in a community where we have some of the best neighbors in the world, and it's obvious here because they're here to support not only me but my cause. They also will be affected by what goes on with the mine. Like I say, there was a lot of misleading information directly from Jim Melchior. I know when I tried to discuss this matters with Don Steffens, and in fact, even Brian can testify to the fact of last week we had a meeting at Derek's office, and I brought up the fact at one point last spring Jim brought a scoria lease to me and was offering to pay me like $1 a ton for the scoria, which is about 20 cents on the dollar of what the market value is. And then he was trying to explain to me that it was a 10-year term lease. And being as I've had some past dealings with Jim, I figured there was more to the story than what he was trying to tell me. So in reading further through the term of the contract, it said in there, unless actively mining, which in essence makes it a perpetual lease. But he distinctly told me and my wife Julie that it was a 10-year lease, and at the 10 years we would, at the end of 10 years, we would be able to renegotiate the price of the scoria. Well, that is not the case, and that was never intended to be the case. When I brought this to the attention of Don Steffens and Brian Bajella, they both said, well, that doesn't matter. You never signed the lease. And when I reiterated my concerns, they repeated theirs. It don't matter. You never signed the lease. But in reality, what I was trying to show is the character of Jim Melchior and how he goes about obtaining these leases under false pretense and misleads the landowners into signing papers that they don't truly understand.
Okay, and Mr. Voigt, I don't have much more. I just want to give you one more opportunity. If there's anything else you want to say or express about your concerns before we close your testimony.
I guess it would kind of go more to the fact of I just, you know, hope we can do justice to the concerns, I think, of not only myself, but a lot of landowners that are affected by reclamation. I know here we are only addressing reclamation from coal mines, but I believe there's a lot of land being reclaimed in North Dakota, not only from the coal mines. I realize that, you know, the PSC probably has the records to confirm that the coal mining industry definitely affects more surface land than any other industry. I believe their records show approximately 100,000 acres of disturbed land, and yet I think to date there's only been a couple thousand actually released from bond. That in itself, I think, shows that there should be some concerns for the reclamation practices, because part of the bond release requirements is that it needs to meet production requirements.
Your Honor?
Yes.
I guess to the extent that bond release on lands and other mines is, that if that is becoming an issue in this proceeding by the statement that Mr. Voigt just made, we would object to that. What is at before this commission is this permit. This permit does not deal or have anything to do with bond release at other mines. It was not part of the permit process. Not those parties aren't at this proceeding today to defend themselves. So I'm not sure where this is going, but I just felt that if they are attempting to put into this proceeding a critique, for lack of a better word, of bond release at other mines, we would object. That is not part of this proceeding, and that should not be allowed to be a part of this proceeding.
It's not.
I'd like to respond.
Yes, Mr. Broughton.
It is a part of this proceeding to some extent, because what Mr. Voigt is explaining is that he is concerned about reclamation on his land. And so some of these concerns, and you'll hear this from some of our experts, relate to the reclamation process. And that reclamation process, as used by the PSC, is used throughout North Dakota. And so one of the things that Mr. Voigt is concerned about is this process obtaining successful bond release? Is it obtaining successful reclamation? And if not, then I'm really concerned about what's going to happen to my land, and that's why I'm here today. And so to that end, it is relevant simply to show that, yes, this is a concern, it's a legitimate concern, and as our experts will say and as Mr. Voigt has testified, there is concern about the specific processes and regulations being used and whether they are achieving successful reclamation. And I think that that very much goes to the question here of whether a mine permit should be issued with an objection that is based on the idea that reclamation won't be successful.
If I may, Your Honor.
Mr. Bale.
Certainly reclamation is a concern of Mr. Voigt and is why we're here today. And we are very much understand that issue and understand that will be part of this proceeding. It's the reclamation that is going to be done on his land. And the reclamation, as in essence, I perceive what's going on here is this is essentially a criticism of the Public Service Commission's reclamation plan and division. But yes, reclamation is a legitimate issue for this discussion at this hearing. But bond release at other mines is not. That was not part of this permit. It's not part of this proceeding. Those companies are not here to defend themselves, to explain why or why not lands were released from bond. About 4 years ago, we had a hearing. Mr. Broughton represented the Dakota Resource Council and against Falkirk when they had a revision that they wanted to put in place for what became Coal Lake. And at that hearing as well, they attempted to bring up bond release at other lands and other mines. And we objected, and this commission sustained my objection and didn't allow it. And I think the same holds true here. Bond release at other mines is not part of this hearing, not part of this permit process, and that testimony should not be allowed. Thank you.
Yeah. Mr. Broughton.
First, I would say that the Coal Lake hearing was limited to a very specific issue with respect to a post-mine use land change on 86 acres of land. We're talking about the issuance of a permit and a rancher with thousands of acres that are going to be mined who is concerned about the success of reclamation on his land. And the bond release from other companies, I mean, a lot of these companies are operations of North American Coal, including Coyote Creek. Some of these mines are right near Mr. Voigt's ranch, and bond release is very much an issue because reclamation is complete, or when reclamation is complete, the land is released from bond. And so the fact that the land largely across the state has not been released from bond indicates that it hasn't been successfully reclaimed. And we're talking about 2,000 acres or so being released from bond, meaning it's been successfully reclaimed in the entire history of coal mining in North Dakota. And I would agree with Mr. Biella that it's not a front and center issue, it's not a major issue, but it is an indication of the problems with reclamation, and it does go straight to Mr. Voigt's concerns about reclamation and how it's going to go on his land, because while these are other mines, they are all subject to the same regulations from the Public Service Commission, and those same regulations, and even more importantly than the regulations, the practices used to get land to comply with those regulations are the same at these different mines. And so it is a very stark indicator of exactly what Mr. Voigt's concern is.
May I, Your Honor?
Yes, you may, Mr. Biella.
Again, reclamation to Mr. Voigt is a concern to him, and we are fully prepared to discuss it. There are other mines, yes, there's at least two other mines that are not North American mines. They're not here today. They have no chance to defend themselves and what they're going to put on the table here with respect to bond release. It's just not an issue. It was not an issue in the permit. If some entity or group wants to make an issue of bond release at other mines, I assume they can petition this Public Service Commission to have an open forum on that issue, on bond release, and let those companies come in and defend themselves. But they're not even here today to defend what is apparently going to be coming from their expert witnesses. It's just not part of the permit. It's not part of this proceeding, and that testimony should just not be allowed. Thank you.
I note that under Administrative Rule 6902.0501, evidence may be received subject to later ruling by the commission. And so that is my ruling. I will allow the evidence subject to the later ruling by the commission on this issue.
Can you break that down for me a little bit, Judge, what you just said?
Sure. Because I am a procedural hearing officer, my ruling, it involves some substance. And so that is why I will allow the evidence to come in during the proceeding. That doesn't mean it's automatically admitted into the proceeding. The ruling is subject to the commission's ruling at a later time.
So the three of us will decide what weight we put on that?
That's correct.
Okay. That's what I thought, but I wanted to...
Mr. Biella?
Judge, may I just follow up?
Yes.
We will decide on that specific matter, or we will decide in our own working through of the issue whether we think it should be allowed or not. Do we have to make a specific ruling on that issue?
You will make a ruling on whether you receive that evidence.
Your Honor, just a point of order question. In the prior proceeding that I mentioned, if my memory serves me correct, the commissioners were asked to vote, and they voted to not allow that testimony. Is that something that could be done today?
The administrative rule just says later. It doesn't say whether it's, you know, during this proceeding or later upon review of the evidence. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
I have the least experience here with this issue, but I think that either party can always ask for the commission to make a ruling to decide whether to confirm or reject the ruling of the administrative law judge. And I guess I see three possible answers here: deny admission, admit it subject to a later, maybe four answers, later decision by the commission whether to admit it subject to the commission giving it what weight the commission thinks it deserves, which is what usually happens, I think, what Commissioner Cog was getting to. And fourthly, a party asking for the issue to go up for a commission vote right now.
Mr. Broughton.
In along the lines of what Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco is saying, I guess I have made it clear why we think this is relevant and important. And what I would point out is that this information comes, is readily available to the Public Service Commission. The information is held by the Public Service Commission. And I personally would trust the commissioners. They have access to this information anyway. So it does explain Mr. Voigt's concerns. And so what I'm asking is we can get into the evidence, and if the commissioners think it's irrelevant or shouldn't have any weight, then it won't go into the record or they won't give it any weight. But at least Mr. Voigt has had the opportunity to put on his entire case.
Mr. Biella.
Your Honor, we would ask that the commission make a ruling on this matter at this time.
May I clarify my comments before they make that ruling?
Not unless you talk to your attorney first. Mr. Broughton, would you like to take a quick break here?
Yeah, if you don't mind.
Let's do that. Let's take about 10 minutes, and we'll address this issue when we come back.